You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more.
Welcome to episode 52 of the Geocaching Podcast. Tonight we're talking with Shauna from Groundspeak about the Where I Go platform. I've got Daryl on the phone with me as the co-host. And first off, again, I want to apologize because for some reason, TalkShoe doesn't like it when we try to do this episode. Last time we had Shauna on the phone, we couldn't get TalkShoe to work, so we couldn't get live people in. And the same thing happened tonight. So, Daryl, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. It's kind of unfortunate, though, that we couldn't have some live folks tonight.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to it, and I was trying to pump it up and let everyone know about it, but apparently TalkShoe just doesn't like us tonight.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we do have at least a voicemail that someone called in.
Well, that's good. Can't wait to hear that. What's been going on with you?
Oh, a whole bunch of stuff, fortunately. It's been a couple of slow months for the caching, but probably the most interesting thing recently, my parents actually attempted two caches today with a newbie that we gave them this weekend for his birthday present. And they had just kind of balked any time we mentioned geocaching before, so that's kind of cool.
Cool. Yeah, what's been going on with me is the same type of thing, not a whole lot of caching, because it's been one of those cold, hot type things here. But the cache that we placed and I talked about last week that I placed for Micah's second birthday, Dan and Candy from our area found that. That was their first. They were their first to find, I mean. And they were actually on our show. They're going to be on our show tonight in our chat room. But since we couldn't do it, I just want to congratulate them on the first to find on that cache. What else has been going on with you?
Oh, let's see. Some people might remember our GPS food signature item. If not, I've got some photos in the Flickr feed. And we actually did a new one for the CETO Day and Earth Day and everything else this year, which we're calling Everlasting GPS Food, and it's actually rechargeable low-discharge NIM batteries. So hopefully people will get turned on to that and start using them, and, they got a couple of free ones for their GPS in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, or actually next weekend following Easter, is the Belle Isle Spring Event, GC17HBP, which is a really cool big event down here. There's about 30-ish caches on Belle Isle right now, and all but two of those are going to be archived following the event, and there's about 30-ish new caches that are going out. So Geek Boy from Illinois is going to be in town for that one, and hopefully we'll run into him there, and he'll find maybe 60 caches.
Sounds cool. I bet he's excited for that one.
Yeah, it'll give him a good way to catch up with ClickCheck.
Yeah, I know that they're in a competition. So, hey, we've got a couple news items. Actually, go ahead and play go ahead and play that feedback, or the listener feedback for us.
Hey, Andy, this is Brian, SCA Jumpmaster. I was just listening to last night's show 51, about waymarking.com. I want to say, first of all, I concur that benchmarks need to be waymarks rather than on geocaching.com. And I think like almost every other geocacher out there, I concur that virtuals need to be geocaches and not waymarks. I had heard that waymarking.com and geocaching.com were going to merge in some way, shape, or form, although I've not heard anything as to how that's going to function or in what way that would be beneficial to geocachers or waymarkers. I have found, waymarking is one of those weird things. You can't say you've actually found something. I have waymarked five historical markers down here in Texas in my local area. I'm the only one, I think, in the area who is doing any waymarking whatsoever. And I only took an interest in it only because I heard that they were merging GC and waymarking back together. I think personally that waymarking is going to be a big beast to handle when they merge, because it's so eclectic. It has no real sound structure like geocaching does. And so you're going to have difficulties. Like, for example, one of the historical markers that I photographed and put on waymarking.com is about 10 feet away from a geocache. Will there be Will there be restrictions and distance? And if so, will some be excluded, or will everything be grandfathered, or will be everything be excluded? And they scratch the whole thing and start over again. Who knows? This would be a great, great question to ask Shauna, but I know she's coming for the specific topic at hand. Anyway, good show. Sorry I wasn't able to join you last night. I get so little time being in the Army to spend with my family that I spend as much of it as I can with my family. But I do enjoy listening to the podcast, and Montu Ryder and Daryl do a great job as your co-hosts. Thanks again, buddy. Bye.
Well, first off, thanks. We enjoy being co-hosts. I believe actually what you're referring to is what's being called Project Phoenix, and Jeremy has been doing a couple of posts on that. My understanding, though, is that it's only going to be a combined login, but the actual sites are still going to be separate. Just you log in through one easy thing, and you know, then you have the links. Do you know anything about that at all, Andy?
I don't. I mean, I've heard Jeremy mention the name Project Phoenix, but I didn't really know much about what was going to entail that with that. I suppose we could ask Shauna a little bit about that a little bit later in the show, too. That's about to the extent of what I've heard with Project Phoenix.
All right. Well, let's get on to our news.
All right. Our first news topic item is the DeLorme and Groundspeak. The DeLorme is going to be the 2008 Cash In Trash Out sponsor. This is the sixth annual Cash In Trash Out event, and it will be held on April 19th and 20th. That's this year. You can find more about that at geocaching.com/CITO. Do you want to hit our next item?
Sure. Along the same kind of lines, DeLorme and REI have gotten together. And for U.S. listeners, there's going to be a promo where if you purchase the EarthMate GPS PN-20 from REI through April 30th, you'll get free quad maps on DVD of any of the states that you like. Now, that's that cool GPS that came out, I want to say it was about a year and a half ago, that actually supports things like the satellite maps. It's a little bit slow, but you know, people seem to like the satellite maps, and I'd certainly like to get my hands on it to try it.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'd like to see that, too.
Well, why don't we get into our main topic for today?
All right, sounds good. Tonight on the phone, we have Shauna from Groundspeak. Welcome to our podcast.
How's it going? Thanks for having
well,
me.
It's been an interesting night so far, as you've heard.
It has been. So technology issues are following me.
Yeah, same thing that we had last time. We tried to do this podcast with you.
It's true. So one of these days, why don't I just call in as a user, and then I can be of assistance.
That might be what we have to do. First thing I want to ask you is, did you have anything you want to correct as far as what we said about Project Phoenix?
You know, we have been working on Project Phoenix for some time, and I think that there will be a way in which we can combine basically the assets of Groundspeak. And when we think about the three websites, you know, geocaching, waymarking, and Warigo, there really is this notion of being a Groundspeak member. And a lot of users don't know that today. So you actually can log in on any of the sites using the same username and password. And so some of the changes that we are creating are inherently already there. We're just adding presence to it. So you'll be a Groundspeak member versus a geocaching member. You know, so you know, we anticipate things like profile pages then being collapsed into a Groundspeak membership profile. But we're not yet at the point to say, you know, how does that change rewards, right? Smileys on geocaching or, you know, badges on waymarking or where I go, you know, the medals versus badges. And so we're not to the level of detail to say what is the user reward for that. But we do know that inherently it makes a ton of sense since we're using the same code base, it's the same users. They want the same usernames, that it'll be a Groundspeak membership. So I think in that instance, that's correct. But the final result, I think, is yet to be determined.
Okay.
You know, but it doesn't mean also, too, that inherently you type in a zip code and the search results can be populated by other items, right? You know, so, you know, it'd be great to live into sort of this world where you open up a cell phone or you open up your GPS device and you say, oh, what geocaches are in my area? What waymarks can I mark? Or what Warigo experiences can I play? But to move to that, we have to think about all those other components, too, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Different file formats, different users, different experiences. And so those are things that we're taking into consideration. So the short answer is that we're not there yet. So we're trying to figure it out.
All right. So. Hey, thanks. That cleared up my my questions about it. That also brings us into the next to our actual topic of tonight, which is the Where I Go. And just briefly, what is Where I Go?
Well, Where I Go is a tool set, you know, for creating basically GPS-enabled, you know, adventures or, you know, tours in the real world. And I say tool set because there's two components to that. There's a Where I Go player application, and there's a Where I Go builder application. So, you know, the Where I Go builder application, inherently you're building these experiences for people to play, right? So there's more players in the world than builders, and that's inherent in everything, right? More finders than hiders. Mm-hmm. But that's really how it works. So instead of navigating to a single point, like a cache, you actually navigate to a polygon or a shape in the world, such as a city block.
Okay.
What was the inspiration for the product? You know, there's been a number of different attempts at kind of live-action video games, and I was wondering if those had any impact on it.
If you go to the Learn More section on whereigo.com, it really explores the history of, you know, the founders for geocaching. You know, Jeremy, Eliza, Brian really had an interest in text adventure games as you know, children, and, you know, as growing up, really, you know, dedicated to, you know, things like The Secret of Monkey Island and Zork, and, you know, really liked that idea of placing a concept like that outside into the real world. So, you know, that's where the inspiration comes.
Yeah, and there's a few other attempts at it that Jeremy actually mentioned at the Chicago event that I attended. One was Pac-Man Hatton, another Zork Body Pong, or Sonic Body Pong. And, yes. You know, there's some cool ideas like that, and this just seems like something a lot more accessible and a little less geeky, too.
We hope, although when you walk in a room with a device of any kind, I think you always look a little bit geeky.
This is true. This is very true.
At least I do.
Well, you know, obviously more of us are going to play than build, and we're probably going to try playing cartridges first, so how would we go about doing that?
Well, if you want to be a builder or a player, let's talk about that. So, you know, to be a player, I mean, either way, you have to really have the components that are required, right? So it's all about, you know, hardware and software. And, you know, to be a player today, you know, you can play outside in the real world if you're lucky enough to have a cartridge near you, this experience that's, you know, downloaded. If you are, you download it to a GPS-enabled Pocket PC or a Garmin Colorado. Now, if you're not, you know, not so lucky as to have a cartridge near you because it is a new experience and a new product, then you can also download that same cartridge or that experience onto your desktop and use the emulator and the builder to just experience what people are creating. And so a lot of people are using the emulator just to get a sense of, you know, what can be done, and really using it too as an inspiration to build, because not a lot of people understand completely what you can build. I think a lot of people think about games as the first thing just because that was the inspiration, but really a lot of things can be created, such as tour, you know, city tour. You go to a city on business and you're not really sure what to do, well, you can go to, you know, whereigo.com and, you know, download a unique tour that's interesting and relevant to someone that may have lived there or visited before. So,
you mentioned the emulator, and that was definitely one thing that I did. I downloaded the builder and I tried out a few of the caches through the emulator because I'm not lucky enough to have the tools yet to actually go out and play them. So I went ahead and downloaded the builder and did the emulator. So that, yeah, I got the chance to see that, and that was definitely cool to see how this, you know, what people had already, you know, made and out there, and I'm excited about it.
There's a lot of interest in it, especially overseas and especially in Europe. So it's really neat for us to see, you know, from Japan to Austria to, there was one from Estonia. There's several that's come out of the UK and Germany. So I think that's pretty exciting for us to see.
One of the things that I've noticed recently on geocaching.com is the Where I Go caches. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the Where I Go caches was a new cache type that we created to integrate the functionality. And so it's taking, you know, obviously a cache has to be included in that in the process, but it's taking the Where I Go concept and saying, I'm going to provide you another experience on top of finding a cache. So you can make people do a little bit more work. You can require inputs of the player, you know, to say, I want to make sure that you are where you are, so I'm going to ask you questions relevant to your location. But also could add storylines, too, to say, a lot of times, you know, caches have historical nature or an educational content that is already shared inherently in the cache pages, so why don't we make that a real-world experience and have somebody experience that, you know, where, you know, you brought them in the location. So I think it's pretty neat, and it sort of bridges that concept because, again, where goes a tool set, so there's no reason why we can't use in the future, you know, Waymark categories as well to say, I want to tour historical markers, or I want to do something else as well with that content.
Well, getting back to the Where I Go caches, it sounds almost like that's going to be a way to build like interactive puzzles or even maybe like a letterbox hybrid kind of tour to get you to the cache.
It certainly can, and it can definitely verify sort of, it can be a multi-stage cache. The way that Where I Go works is, you know, you draw this shape, you know, or this polygon into the world, and, you know, say it's a city block. Well, as a builder, you define what happens in that space. So if you want to put a virtual character or a virtual object in that space, you can. But as a player walks into that city block, you get to speak to that character or interact with that item. And so, you know, if you take that into a cache concept, you put a cache in the middle of that shape or zone. Well, as you walk into that zone, you as a cache owner could be the virtual character that they speak to say, hey, you're getting close to my cache, but you're not quite there yet. You need to answer a couple questions for me. You know, and you could really... You can do that real world today using the Where I Go cache functionality.
Very cool. Now, to build the caches, we obviously have to download that builder. But what's involved in actually using the builder to create a cartridge?
So you have to follow the download requirements, right? So it requires a .NET framework and the builder tool. And then you can build a simple cartridge. So create zones, create items or characters. And then what happens is that the Where I Go cache... The cache lives on geocaching.com, and you go through the regular procedures for posting a cache on geocaching.com, and then it links to whereigo.com to get the cartridge component.
And then what are the limitations to post cartridges to whereigo, not necessarily for the whereigo caches, but just in general to build a cartridge?
You know, are they being reviewed at this time for content? No. No, there's not a reviewer base or a volunteer base that's reviewing specific, you know, Where I Go cartridges.
All right, so right now there's no restrictions on, you know, not being able to put it into a park that might require an entry fee. So, you know, you could build a tour of a zoo, for instance.
You can. You can, for instance. We have done that, actually, as a beta test. Yeah, the commercial rules that apply to geocaching.com do not apply to Where I Go.
Yeah, very cool. That's going to be a lot of fun. Now, is there a cost, though, for either the builder or the player?
There's not. It's free to build and free to play.
Very cool. Yeah, I can definitely see a whole lot of applications for this, you know, not just the games and the Where I Go caches, but the tours.
Well, and I really should preface that to say, too, I mean, today it's free. You know, in the future, you know, I think that we are open as a company to having, you know, if somebody wants to provide commercial content and use our tool set and they want to charge $1 a download for a cartridge, I think we're certainly open to that in the future. But inherently, you know, we provide free tool sets that are then used by other folks.
Yeah, I could definitely see paying a couple of bucks to get a tour of a city that I'm visiting, you know, once-in-a-lifetime thing. Now, Andy, do you have any cool ideas that you've come up with for this platform yet?
Just what we had talked about before briefly, the tour idea, I think that's a really good idea because you have your location-based triggers as far as your characters that you interact or what or stuff like that. So I think, like you were talking about with your rail trails and things like that, are going to be an awesome idea, especially when you can have audio in there and or pictures or anything, you know, like that. I think that's going to be, that's where I see, I'm more interested in that than necessarily a gaming application. I mean, I think the games application is going to be cool, but I think for me, I'm less likely to play because I know I'm myself are hesitant to play, like, the games that are on my GPS now, like the Nibbles Maze and things like that, just because I'm going to look like a fool. But then again, well, I mean, a lot of times we do that geocaching too, you know, we're running around like, you know, a drunk character trying to find, like, hidden treasure.
Yeah, the drunken bee syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, I think the tours would be great. My wife is a huge, like, history buff and loves the Civil War, and I would love to see a tool or a, you know, a cartridge that was able to do tours of Civil War type things. I think that would be awesome. That's what I see.
It really seems like the Pocket PC is the better platform, though, to actually enjoy these cartridges, because unfortunately Colorado doesn't support the audio or video.
Yeah, it has system beeps versus, you know, WAV files.
Right. It's the whole thing of being, you know, a handheld GPS, I'm sure, versus, you know, a full PDA that's trying to be a small little computer.
Yeah, they're very different devices inherently. So, and, you know, the Pocket PC UI, you know, we have control of from, you know, Groundspeak side versus somebody else who owns their own device. So it's very different.
Well, I'm really looking forward to actually getting in and starting to develop some cartridges. I have downloaded it, but unfortunately haven't had much time to get in and learn how to use it. I understand, though, that there's probably going to be some better instructions coming on how to get in and actually use that tool.
There will be. So, you know, hopefully soon, I was going to say, don't quote me on this, but hopefully in the next, you know, couple days or so, you'll see something go up. And, you know, we hope that it provides enough instruction to get people started. You know, inherently there's this, you know, push and pull for tutorials to say, you know, I don't want to lead people too specifically down a certain path, because inherently the builder's pretty open to different ways of building, and you don't want to restrict people's creativity and the use of the tools, and yet we do want to provide enough instruction to get them to explore and play on their own, right? So hopefully we would have found that happy, you know, medium, and we'll hear from the community if we haven't. So, but they are interactive, and so they do provide high-level definitions, but also opportunities to click through instructions and also watch videos. And so inherently, if you're not understanding the directions, then you can really see it real time as well. And so we've, you know, taken a lot of time to do both, inherently not knowing what's the best learning style for this kind of, you know, tool set. So hopefully you guys will be pleasantly surprised. And if not, I would be happy to hear, you know, suggestions for improvements.
Well, I'll certainly be checking those out as soon as they pop up there, because I'm anxious to check those out.
Well, and I have a question for you guys, if I can ask it, if that's okay. Going back to the Civil War example, you know, in that case, it's great to be a history buff, but my only question to that is to say, do you want to just read information relative to the history of the site, you know, walk around, recreate it, and maybe watch videos or imagery and read text, or do you want to be part of that? And I say part of that in that if I bring you to a location, say a Civil War site, and I ask you a question to say, what side do you want to fight on? You know, and I make you recreate history through physical actions. You know, which way is going to grab you and be more engaging? Now, both are functionally capable from the builder. I can provide both experiences. But I'm just wondering, from your personal perspective, you know, what would be more appropriate or engaging?
I think it depends on, like, if I'm with my family, you know, with my wife and kids, I think it'd be fun to do the recreation type of a thing. If I'm by myself, I would probably want to just read it or watch it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm with other people, I think it'd be fun to do like the recreation type of a thing. And part of that is, I mean, and you'll see this a lot of times with Civil War, is because you have reenactments and stuff that you can go watch. And I think that'd be awesome to be able to do that with the Where I Go tool.
Yeah, I like both ideas, but I think I'd probably be more into the self-paced tour, so I could spend time, you know, and explore maybe a little bit more in depth, you know, a certain location or something that struck my fancy.
It's interesting. Obviously, you guys know we've been doing beta testing for quite a while now, and we created a test case in San Jose, I believe, where it's Sutter's Fort. And, you know, in the real world, real time, Sutter's Fort, they have actually recreated, you know, what happened back in the day, and you pay a $4 entry fee, I think, and there's actors that are live. You know, so you've got a merchant, you've got, you know, the blacksmith, and you have, you know, folks making broth in the square or whatever. And we went down there and created an educational cartridge for kids and did essentially the same thing that the actors do, but made, you know, the child then answer questions relative to the occupations, right? So, you know, they show up as John Futter, you know, John Sutter's assistant, and they're immediately tasked, you know, with three, you know, issues to help solve. And they have to walk around and then go to the areas real time, real world, to speak to the merchant. And the merchant asks them to do something to say, you know, here's the issue that I'm having, please evaluate these documents and get back to me with a solution. And so the students still gets that history but it's delivered in a way that they have to examine it and be part of the solution. And you know, we obviously only provide the solution that's actually historically correct. Then they go through the cartridge and they finish it. And that was one approach that we took for students and for education, but I just wondered if that would be adaptable to different demographics and different ages. So that's why I asked.
I think, like I said, for me, if I was, I could see both ways. I guess even if I was by myself, I could see doing that, I suppose, too.
Yeah, because it has that puzzle element of, I want to solve this problem. So it's interesting. I appreciate your guys' feedback because, again, there's no one thing that really grabs all audiences, which is great because it's an open platform and people can develop, you know, what they wish to target, you know, who they really want to be outside playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting onto the getting our hands on this platform, I understand that you're going around and doing some Where I Go events.
We did. We did with Launch. We did a number of the Groundspeak, you know, Garmin events. I think we did ended up doing four of them. Those are finished now. But what Groundspeak will do is that we are going to be hosting sort of the what we call Build and Play workshops. And on the Demand It link on whereigo.com, the Demand It link is relative to those Groundspeak-specific events. And what we'll do is we'll go into a city and then we haven't quite decided if it's really a one-day or two-day event because it's inherently different folks that will be interested in different ways to participate. And so, again, you have the players that really just want to experience what a Where I Go cartridge looks and feels like, and they just want to go out and have a good time and have, you know, some facilitation. But also, we want to encourage builders. And so a build-and-play workshop inherently starts with building for playing for inspiration to say, oh, this is what that you do. This is what it means to play. But then it brings you back indoors into a computer lab or some other space for which we actually lead you through building your own cartridge. You know, inherently that's, you know, what we want to focus on so that people can create location-based experiences in their own hometowns.
Well, I'll sign up for one of those for certain.
Yeah, that'd be definitely worth it. I mean, I think that'd be good to get your hands on as far as a builder goes. So, you know, see the first hand how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we think it'll be great to be able to serve the community in that way, but inherently you can see the issue to say, you know, hundreds of people would potentially want to come and play, and yet only a handful of those will want to build. And so it might really be a two-day event, a Saturday, all-day event, you know, playing participants, and then Sunday, come back if you really want to build, and we'll teach you all day. And so if you have suggestions for that or recommendations, I'm building a tour schedule now. I have those cities identified and the loose dates in some instances and loose venues. And so those will be announced probably in about a month or so, and it'll go through the summer.
And then the listeners can hit that demand an event link from Where I Go to ask for one in their area.
They can. They also can find it from the forums as well, from the Where I Go forums.
And the other way, like you said, too, to be able to try this out is the builder does allow the simulation, and so you can try it out. So you can get your hands on this and kind of try to see how this works if you don't have one of the supported devices. And that all can be found at the whereigo.com website.
It can be. And I think it'll be a really great test to say once we publish some of these early tutorial tools, then we'll really get a chance to see if, you know, where our product can be improved, what the inherent questions are, and then we'll be very much more prepared to go on a tour. Did they use Demand It? Because we don't want to waste people's time either to say some of these things are very fundamental and we just haven't served our customers very well. But beyond that, once we get everyone on the same sort of playing field, now let's really talk about creative stuff. You know, let's really talk about more advanced concepts. And I think a lot of people are excited to get there.
Okay. And again, this is kind of a goofy section here. My wife last week, if you listen, had a Jules Says section, and when I told her we were doing the Where I Go this week, she said in response to the Where I Go platform, she just says, I don't know. That's all she says. So that's our new section is the Jules Says section. So I thought I'd throw that out there. Dale, do you have anything else to ask Shauna here while we're on the call, on the podcast, as far as the Where I Go platform?
Well, nothing else comes to mind. I'm just anxious to get my hands on the builder and sit down and try to actually put something together.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I played with it a little bit with the builder, and I'm looking forward to more sitting down and actually trying this out. And I'm excited, even though I don't have the correct playing tools. I'm excited to. I want to get a cache out there where I go cache and try and spread the word about this, because I love trying to do new things. Like when waymarking came out, I was out there trying to do waymarking and with this, I'm anxious to get out there and see more about it and try to spread the word about it.
I think it'll be fun. I'm glad to be on again. If you guys want to have additional questions once the instructions come out and there's a little bit more guidance, so I'm happy to answer questions in real time from the audience.
Yeah, assuming TalkShoe doesn't decide that where I go is something that it doesn't want to deal with again.
So, and perhaps I'll feel a little bit better, so those two things will coincide. Audience participation, Shauna feels well, tools are up. That would be a grand day altogether.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I actually think it's something to do with me being on the show, Andy, though. It seems to only happen if I'm co-hosting.
Well... We'll try next or in 2 weeks when you're back co-hosting and we'll see how it goes then. We'll see if it works. If it's just you or if it's actually the Where I Go platform that TalkShoe doesn't like.
But it's happened before we even start talking about Where I Go.
That's
so
true.
We
that
can't
is
blame
true.
Where I Go for it.
Or me.
Or Shauna. Yes.
You can't blame me. Typically, I'm good luck. Not in this case, but.
I want to thank everyone for downloading and listening to this Where I Go episode 52 of the Geocaching Podcast. I want to apologize again that our live interaction did not work tonight. And you can find our show notes, geocachingpodcast.info, and we'd love to hear from you. So there's all sorts of ways to contact us there. If you have any questions, we'll be building a list of questions. And like Shauna said, if once this stuff, the tools come out or the instructional stuff comes out and you guys have more questions, we can try to get her back on. So we'd love to have you guys send in questions to us. So go ahead and do that. Once again, thanks for listening to episode 52 of the Geocaching Podcast. Have a good week and go get them.